Kang versus Astru, Mr. Schultz.
May it please the Court, Your Honors, Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, Neri Kang. The decision of the administrative law judge in this case is insufficient. The ALJ's entire analysis of the plaintiff's credibility and of her mental impairment is found in one small paragraph at page 18 of the administrative record. And in finding the plaintiff not entirely credible, the ALJ failed to even mention any of the plaintiff's testimony. Though he says that her symptoms could reasonably be caused by her impairments, but then he finds her not entirely credible with no mention of what she said or of how he analyzed what she said. I think that should be enough to reverse his credibility finding, because if an ALJ is assessing a claimant's credibility, they should at least have to discuss the testimony that was presented to them. In addition, the ALJ found that Ms. Kang suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder and depression prior to the expiration of her insured status in March of 2004. But then in analyzing the severity of her claim and in analyzing her credibility, the ALJ failed to even mention or discuss the trauma that Ms. Kang experienced. And this is a case of a woman who, when she was a teenager, was tortured by the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia, and whose parents and three siblings were killed by the Khmer Rouge. She testified to experiencing nightmares during the relevant time period, nightmares that became so intrusive in her daily life that she was forced to quit the job that she was doing, running a video store. She and her husband had owned two video stores, and they each ran one, but she had to stop running hers because the nightmares were so intrusive she couldn't concentrate. She was too scared to go out. Administrative law judge doesn't even discuss these factors, and it seems unreasonable for a judge, an ALJ, to analyze a claimant's credibility concerning symptoms from post-traumatic stress disorder without even discussing the underlying trauma.
The emphasis of the ALJ is on the timing of these psychiatric symptoms, that they all occurred after the last insured date.
Right. And actually the ALJ's decision is internally inconsistent on that point, because the ALJ finds that she suffered from PTSD and depression prior to the date last insured, and then he later finds that her psychiatric impairments and treatment all surfaced after the date last insured. But yet he found that her impairments were in existence prior to the date last insured, and then makes the exact opposite statement twice later on in his decision. And the evidence shows that in 2002, Dr. Katz, the claimant's primary treating physician, not a mental health specialist, noted that she was experiencing poor memory and poor concentration. And then again, Dr. Katz, only 22 days after the date last insured expired, he noted that Ms. Kang was feeling overwhelmed, experiencing sadness, and having frequent crying spells. That was only 22 days later. The ALJ and then Ms. Kang testified to the fact that she was having nightmares and had to quit her job, and this was all prior to the date last insured. In addition, the evidence given to the treating mental health practitioners later on, for instance, in February of 2005, the doctor noted that Ms. Kang's sadness and nightmares and the fact that she was self-mutilating herself by scratching herself with a coin, that those symptoms had been progressively worse, especially the last 2 years. So that would go back to 2003, well before the date last insured in 2004. So the ALJ really doesn't undergo any proper analysis of the evidence that does show that Ms. Kang was experiencing significant symptoms prior to the expiration of her insured status.
Was she scratching herself with a coin before the last insured date?
Yes.
What is this scratching yourself with a coin business?
Well, there's really no significant discussion of that. It seemed to be some self-mutilating behavior because of the anxiety disorder that the claimant was experiencing.
It didn't go into it where she was scratching herself or whether she was causing breaking the skin or what have you?
I don't believe there's any more detail about that in this record.
More or less normal people who have little, you know, obsessive behaviors, scratching them, their head or something.
That's true, Your Honor. I mean, I think the most significant symptom
your
here...
Your experience between the two is way past mine.
The most significant symptom here and the hallmark symptom of post-traumatic stress disorder is the nightmares causing intrusive thoughts of being afraid of being tortured again, of the claimant wouldn't even go out by herself because of her. She was afraid and scared of going out, afraid that someone would take her away to be tortured. And I think, you know, this court in the Wilder case, as well as in the Allard case and the Lichter versus Bowen, has indicated on many occasions that a claimant doesn't have to have received treatment for mental health problems prior to the date last insured in order to be found disabled at that point. The question is there evidence of significant symptoms? And here the ALJ's analysis is really not much of an analysis. I mean, he also includes the fact that, well, the Ms. Kang's symptoms intensified after her brother committed suicide. That's true. Her symptoms did intensify after her brother committed suicide. But that's not a basis for finding her not credible as to the severity of her symptoms prior to that point, especially when 2 months before her brother died, the plaintiff went in for an interview at the Social Security office due to her disability application. And the notations of the district office employee were that Ms. Kang was sweating uncontrollably. She had a poor memory. She was unable to concentrate even during this very short interview. And then again, 6 months before her brother died, Dr. Katz noted that the plaintiff was feeling overwhelmed, feelings of sadness, and she was having frequent crying spells. So the evidence is clear that Ms. Kang was experiencing these symptoms well before the unfortunate event with her brother's death. So it's not reasonable to rely on the fact that her symptoms intensified to find that she was not disabled prior to that point. The ALJ also makes a comment that the plaintiff was prescribed Lexapro, and the district court relied on that fact and said that, well, because Ms. Kang wasn't prescribed a medication specifically targeted for PTSD, that supported the ALJ's credibility finding. Yet, as we pointed out in our brief, SSRIs, antidepressant medication, are often prescribed for PTSD, and Lexapro is just that kind of medication. So the district court erred in that finding. And again, the fact that she wasn't prescribed Lexapro until after the date last insured goes to the fact that her treating doctor didn't refer her for a mental health evaluation until after that date, but yet the record shows that Ms. Kang was experiencing significant symptoms prior to that time. And then finally, I just wanted to mention that the ALJ found that the plaintiff did suffer from these mental impairments, but then found that she only had mild limitations. But yet he made that finding in a vacuum. There was no evaluation by any mental health specialist as to how severe the plaintiff's conditions were. And the only evaluation was by Dr. Travis, but Dr. Travis said the evidence was insufficient to find that she even suffered from an impairment. But the ALJ implicitly rejected Dr. Travis's opinion because he found, as I noted, that she did suffer from the PTSD and depression, and he needed some type of evaluation, expert evaluation, to determine the severity of the claim. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Mr. Sami?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. The key issue in this case, Your Honors, is whether Mrs. Kang met her burden to demonstrate that she had significant work-related symptoms.
What about the contradiction that Mr. Schultz mentioned? The ALJ does say that through the date last insured, the claimant had post-traumatic stress disorder. And then later in the opinion, it says the claimant's psychiatric impairments all surfaced after the DLI.
Well, Your Honor, I think it appears that there is an inconsistency there, but really it's sort of a hyper-technical reading of the ALJ's decision. A reasonable...
I don't understand that. It's an outright contradiction.
But, Your Honor, clearly the ALJ found...
How could she have PTSD before the DLI if she had no impairments until after the DLI?
Your Honor, the ALJ found that she did have PTSD prior to her date last insured.
Well, how did he know that? She had no symptoms.
Well, he didn't find that she had no symptoms. Rather, the ALJ found
what
that
she... What symptoms did she have?
Well, based on her testimony, based...
You know, what symptoms did the ALJ think she had, find that she had?
The ALJ did not find specific symptoms, but he did...
He must have found enough symptoms to have classified her as having PTSD.
Yes, Your Honor. That...
So what were they?
The ALJ did not...
Well, he must have believed her testimony, right?
To the extent that she had PTSD or depression.
Okay, so what is it, what are the symptoms she had before the critical date?
Your Honor, the ALJ did not record her symptoms.
Well, how do we know they weren't serious if we don't know what they were?
Looking at the ALJ's decision, Your Honor, he does record her subjective reports to Ms. Allen, who is her treating therapist, that she suffered from nightmares, that she had sadness, fatigue, depression.
I'm talking about what the symptoms were before that March 2004 date.
Well, these symptoms that the ALJ notes in his decision are the symptoms that were described by Mrs. Kang. So those are symptoms of PTSD, as noted by counsel, as noted by Kathy Allen, as noted in the DSM-4, that are reasonably attributed to depression, to PTSD. The ALJ did find, quite clearly in the decision, that she did have a medically determinable impairment, including depression, PTSD. But based on his review of the relevant evidence in the record, which includes the objective medical evidence, the opinion evidence, and her allegations, he found that she had mild limitations in the various criteria under the paragraph B criteria.
Well, did at some point he say that prior to the DLI that she had hepatitis B, diabetes type 2, depression, plus post-traumatic stress disorder?
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't that the response to Judge Posner's question of other symptoms and ailments he had?
Well, yes. I believe Judge Posner was asked specifically what symptoms he found were based, that he based his findings and limitations on. There's no dispute that her physical impairments are not at issue in this case. It's solely her mental impairments that are at issue on appeal now, Your Honor. But again,
so it's kind of gibberish. The claimant's psychiatric impairments all surfaced after after the DLI.
Yes, Your Honor.
Psychiatric problems intensified after her brother's suicide.
Correct,
but
Your Honor.
She had psychiatric problems. I'm just puzzled by the fact that he never explains what led him to diagnose her as having PTSD before that critical date.
Well, Your Honor, in giving a fair reading to his decision, he does state that he considered the opinion evidence of record and the opinion evidence of her treating sources, including Ms. Kathy Allen. Ms. Kathy Allen was present at the hearing. She did testify that when Mrs. Kang came to her in February 2005, which did significantly follow her date last insured, that she had severe symptoms. He was presented with the argument from counsel, which laid out...
If you look at the bottom of page 5 of his opinion, he seems to be accepting the fact that she had complaints of fear, feeling overwhelmed, tearful often, mental health evaluation scheduled, sadness, nightmares, 2 years of scratching herself with a coin, symptoms progressively worse, That's at the bottom of 5. At the top of 6, again, he repeats the claimant's psychiatric problems and treatment all surfaced after the DLI. Now, he's just listed all her psychiatric problems.
With respect.
And now he says they all surfaced after the DLI. How could they have all surfaced when 2 sentences before that he's described all the things that had surfaced before?
Your Honor, at the bottom of page 5, what the ALJ is doing is not accepting her psychiatric symptoms as fact. What he's doing is acknowledging
and recounting what she has claimed.
In fact, what he says here is
progress notes indicate only, etc., which includes the tearful. Adult mental health assessment indicates claimant reported, you know, this and that and the scratching. He doesn't say he doesn't believe her.
What he does say, though, is that she was seen for complaints of allergies.
Yeah, but where does he say, on the top, when he says the claimant's psychiatric problems all surfaced, where does he say that he doesn't believe her, the complaints she made?
He says that in the middle of page 5, he says the claimant's statements concerning the intensity, persistence, and limiting effect of these symptoms are not entirely credible. He explicitly states...
What does that mean, not entirely credible? He goes on and lists all these complaints she's made. He doesn't say which ones he doesn't believe. Also, I don't like that, you know. I don't like that paragraph about not entirely credible. You know why? That's boilerplate. We have that same paragraph in another... Social Security case today by another ALJ.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's not a good sign.
Your Honor, would
when
you...
credibility determination is embodied in a piece of boilerplate, and he doesn't indicate which of these reports about her complaints at the bottom of page 5 he doesn't believe.
Well, Your Honor, but he does indicate, and he does lay out...
He does not indicate which of those he believes and which he doesn't believe.
Your Honor, what the ALJ does...
He doesn't... Am I correct?
No, he does not specifically say, I don't believe she had nightmares giving her disabling limitations or that her scratching herself with a coin did not. But what the ALJ does do, Your Honor, is he...
If he believed that she, for 2 years she's been scratching herself with a coin, which sounds like really nutty behavior, you'd think if he disbelieved that, he'd say, yeah, I don't believe that.
The point is, Your Honor, is that...
Did he believe it?
Clearly he did not believe that that led to disabling symptoms.
You think he believed her or he didn't believe her?
Do I think he believed her? Clearly he did not believe her because he didn't believe
that she scratched herself with the coin?
He did not believe...
Where did he say that?
Your Honor, that is not the position I just took. What the ALJ did was he did not believe that Mrs. King's testimony, in concert with all the other relevant evidence in the record, showed that she had significant work-related symptoms.
But that would
symptoms.
Depend on what he believed and what he didn't believe. How do we know he didn't believe about the coin and believed about the nightmares and all that, but he thought, what the hell, you know, she's just a little quirky. How do we know that?
Because he found that she did not have significant work-related limitations.
But we don't know what his conception of a significant limitation is.
We do. The regulations clearly spell it out. It's whether there's a significant impact on the ability to do basic work activities. And in this case, the ALJ reasonably found that she did not have... I see my time is up, Your Honor.
Would that be a reasonable finding if he believed everything she said and all these complaints she'd made?
No, Your Honor, I do not...
Then don't we have to know what part of her testimony or her complaints he didn't believe?
No, Your Honor, the point in this case, the key point, is that Mrs. King needed to corroborate her subjective complaints with something.
He didn't say any of that stuff. Come on.
I believe the court understands the government's position. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Salmi. Mr. Schultz?
putting yourself in a position of danger. You know?
I understand that. Yeah. Just one point, actually, follow up on what Judge Posner said just now, is that given what the symptoms were, and there was no suggestion that the symptoms were other than what Ms. Kang testified to, somebody who's afraid to go outside, it's hard to understand how the ALJ determined that she only had mild limitations in daily activities when she was too scared to go out of her house by herself.
Didn't he acknowledge that she did have those psychiatric problems before the date of last insurance, but they were not severe, right? I mean, isn't that what he said?
That's what he found, but he found that without any analysis as to how he determined that someone who's having nightmares so bad that they have to quit their job because they can't concentrate, how is that a mild limitation? There's no analysis of that in this record. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you to both counsel. Next case for argument, United States versus Kirby, Mr. Lieberman.